history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories out there that need to be told. And if we'll take the time to ask a few questions and listen, you never know what we might find out about those men and women who have put their lives on the line for us. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as I said, when we take that journey, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're always entertained, and so often inspired by these tales from our greatest generation. Today I'm in Merced, California, visiting with 92-year-old Ralph Thiessen, originally from Chowchilla, California, right down the road from here. And how many kids were there in your family, Ralph?
10.
10 kids. That's a big family. And what number were you?
4.
So early enough to get a lot of chores and maybe have some little siblings to pick on a little bit?
That's true.
But you weren't born here in California.
No.
You're born in Wisconsin. Where in Wisconsin?
About in the middle of the state.
Uh-huh. And so you were just a kid when you moved here to California, and I'm sure that was quite a difference. But what do you remember about those early years in Wisconsin? What was life like up there?
A lot of snow, for one thing. I was only 6 years old when we left there, so there's not too many things I remember about it.
Was that exciting to move, or was that kind of scary?
Well, we lived in a town there in Marshville and moved out to the country here in Chowchilla.
Mm-hmm.
So, big difference.
And your father was a World War I veteran.
Right.
I've seen a couple pictures of him in uniform in World War I. Did he ever tell you kids about anything that he did in the war?
Not really. He's pretty quiet. The only story he ever told me was that he had a German machine gun shooting at him. So there was a barn close by, so he said he drove into the window and was able to escape.
Good thing he did, or else you wouldn't have been born.
That's right.
And you've got 5 kids and 9 grandkids who can tell a similar story because of your experience in the Navy in World War II. But before we get to World War II, I want to hear about these years here in the San Joaquin Valley, because you moved here just in time for the Great Depression. What was that time like here? What did you see of that era?
Well, we ate a lot of field corn.
The stuff that's supposed to be for the cows?
Right. We did a lot of corn cooking. I liked sports that we had in Chowchilla. I played football, baseball, and basketball. And so I liked my high school here in Chowchilla.
And I bet if you got 10 kids in the family, those kids probably have a lot of chores to do.
Yeah, we milked the cows by hand, the no machines, and we had a big chicken ranch and had a hatchery there. My dad raised turkeys, just about completed our farming.
So did you have to chase the turkeys, or were you collecting eggs or shoveling chicken excrement or what?
No, he didn't keep them that long to start laying eggs. He usually got rid of them around Thanksgiving, but he enjoyed it. He didn't have to take orders from anybody, but he was on his own, and he really liked that. So I was pretty proud of him.
Sounds like he taught you 10 kids some important lessons or principles.
All right.
Is there something that you think stands out that was the most important thing you gleaned from that?
I just know I never got any beatings from him, so I got a lot of that.
You must have been following the rules.
Yeah.
Or not getting caught, one of the two.
Right.
And as far as your hometown, Chowchilla, what was it like then? What were the big things to do?
Well, the people in the family didn't get to spend much money in the town, and but the only thing they had a theater, and we'd go to the show once in a while, but that was about it.
You're 92 now, so if I do the math, that tells me you were in high school when Pearl Harbor happened, December 7th, 1941.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about that Sunday? How did you find out what happened?
Well, we were playing basketball, practicing.
So someone came in the gym and told you what happened, or what?
No, I heard it at home, and I had to take my brother. He was hitchhiking to Fresno, going to school at Fresno State.
Was that shocking news? Did you understand what had happened or what it was going to mean?
Yeah, I hadn't realized what was happening. Although I didn't hear about Hawaii too much until then.
Yeah, it wasn't even a state yet.
No.
How did you see life changing after that?
Well, I decided I wanted to go into the Navy, and a good friend of mine in high school was Tom Begley. Tom and I went in the service. Tom went to the Marines, and I went to the Navy, and I boarded the Saratoga in Bremerton, Washington. And one day in the dining line, Tom was way in the back, and I turned around, and I said, well, it sure looks like Tom Begley. So I went back, and it was. And I didn't expect him. I thought he just came aboard because some come on and just help, or got fired. They got a fire signature that you take when somebody's welding or something like that. And so I had Tom come to dinner with me on Sarah, and we started talking about old times. And I'd go up there and visit him, and the Marines are really, really nice. I enjoyed being around them. But Tom, one time, I tried to get him to go down to the fire room where I was stationed. And so he came down there with me, and he didn't stay down very long. I don't know if he thought the sailors wouldn't like him or why his idea was. So he got out of there. So
maybe it's a little hot for him down there.
Well, I didn't take him all the way down, though.
I don't want you to lose your spot in the story, but there are a couple of things that come to mind here, and so everybody understands. So you and Tom in high school were pretty close,
mm-hmm.
but you're in the Navy. He's in the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to a lot of guys. I mean, I've talked to a lot of guys who went to sign up together with the hopes that, hey, if I sign up with my buddies, we're all going to go to the same place. We'll get mm-hmm. to be in the war together. And it never worked out that way for him. And here you go in the Navy, he goes in the Marines, and you end up on the same ship?
Mm-hmm.
How is that possible?
I don't know. His sister was glad that we were together.
Yeah, what do you need to tell me about his sister?
Well, she was a school teacher, very lovable person. I dated her for quite a few years.
Uh-huh.
Our religious, she was a Baptist, I was Catholic, so it didn't work out.
But she thought highly of you. So when you're heading off to sea, she was writing you letters and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
And then her brother, your buddy Tom, ends mm-hmm. up on the same ship as you, just one of a handful of Marines on this giant carrier with a ton of sailors.
Mm-hmm.
That had to be a kind of a mind-blowing moment when you see him in that line.
I did. I was in line when I seen him back there.
Yeah?
I motioned him to come have lunch with us. He did. But I thought maybe he was just coming in for a work detail because we did have Marines come in for that.
Mm.
So it's nice. I'm going to be stationed aboard the Sarah.
And let's talk about the Sarah. So the Saratoga was a very historic aircraft carrier. I mean, and some people don't realize that in the breadth of World War II, from 41 to 45, the carriers at the start of the war were a far cry from the carriers they were bringing in mm-hmm. at the end of the war.
Well, the Saratoga was carrier number 3. We did a lot of, over in Hawaii, we trained a lot of pilots there because it was a big carrier. And I had seen a couple of guys go on a drink, but they got out all right. The ships that they wouldn't anchor us together because we get in a fight once in a while with the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time when we docked and they had us all go stand in line to get our maneuver out in this town. And we got together and had to kind of protect each other. Because we're pretty sure there'd be some fights otherwise.
So the guys from the Big E didn't like the guys from the Sarah?
My first of two.
Uh-huh. Well, good thing you both decided you were fighting the Japanese and not each other.
Right.
Both of those ships had quite a history.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about your duties on the Saratoga. You're just a teenager from Chowchilla on a big ship that probably had more people on the ship than in Chowchilla, right?
Yeah, I think so. When we had air, you guys are handling the airplanes. We increased the men on the ship, and we had the hangar deck. We had planes down in there, and then we had planes on the topside. But I was a water king, which is something that not too many guys in the Navy know about.
Mm-hmm.
I kept track of the ship's water, and when I left the boiler room, that's where I went. I left the soundings back of the boiler. If the smoke was coming out of the smokestack, I'd be up on top and watching it. I'd have to tell the boilers down below that they're smoking to clear it up.
And how would you do that? You do that over at intercom?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So how much of your time did you spend down below deck?
4 hours on and 4 hours off.
Uh-huh. If general quarters ever sounded, what would you have to do?
I was to go down to this machine area, and we had our pumps down there to put out the fires wherever they are, and I run that pump. probably on that one time when we got hit by the Japanese kamikazes.
And not just by one or two, but by no fewer than five kamikaze planes. That was on February 21st, 1945, off of Iwo Jima. But it would not be enough to sink the legendary ship. The USS Saratoga had quite a history. She was originally laid down as a battle cruiser in 1920, converted to an aircraft carrier in 1922. In 1938, the Saratoga, how about this, actually carried out a mock attack on Pearl Harbor that in retrospect featured some eerie parallels to how the Japanese caught America sleeping 3 years later in that same spot. On December 7, 1941, the Saratoga was pulling into San Diego, but a little more than a month later, she took her first hit, struck by a Japanese torpedo near Hawaii. The carrier would have been involved in the Battle of Midway, but a delay in loading aircraft aboard put her behind schedule. The Saratoga would participate in the Guadalcanal campaign in August of 1942. A month later, she was struck by another enemy torpedo, leaving her dead in the water, but this was one resilient carrier. After more repairs, the Saratoga continued her impressive war record, helping to decimate Rabaul and then supporting the invasion of Tarawa in November of 1943. Continuing in the Pacific and even for a while in the Indian Ocean, the Saratoga in mid-1944 was converted to a training carrier, practicing with night fighter outfits at Pearl Harbor on into January 1945, when with those two teenagers from Chowchilla, California aboard, Tom Bagley and Ralph Thiessen, she sailed for Iwo Jima, where her planes would attempt to soften up Japanese defenses as Marines came ashore. It was there, off of Iwo Jima, that the Saratoga faced her darkest day, a day only one of those best friends would live to tell about. And that's exactly what he's going to do when we come back. Go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos and even a short video related to today's episode. And we'll come right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. It gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.